From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
A county government from deep inside Trump land in Ohio formally recognized racism as a public health crisis that has led to disparities in everything from poverty and infant mortality to coronavirus infections. Franklin County, Ohio commissioners asked the state leaders to take similar steps. We take this apparent contradiction with the media's popular depiction of Trump voters as racist deplorables to Professor Tony Montero, the Du Boisian scholar from Philadelphia, to take a look at what is really going on in Trump land with the question of race.
Well, Tony, so we have the focus of the world basically on public health systems, public health emergencies, etc. with this pandemic. Emergency, unprecedented reorganization of resources at a global level, first time really in history, where it was coordinated all from one side as opposed to two warring factions or whatever.
I wonder if people can envision a global response to this. An interesting development, to be sure, where all of a sudden you have people recognizing
a new public health threat that's been around a long time.
Yeah, this is very important. And you're talking about passage by the commissioners of Franklin County, Ohio, of a law that says that racism and white supremacy are public health emergencies. This happened a few days ago. And the thing about it is that in this dark night of depression, economic depression, and people dying in the tens of thousands across the country, and deep uncertainty in a county in the center of Ohio, where the biggest city in this county, in fact, in the state of Ohio, Columbus, Ohio, is located, a county that is 69% white, only 21% black, and about 10%, Asian and Latinos. But in this county, they passed this resolution declaring white supremacy a public health emergency. I'm certain that if you look at the numbers going back to 2016, that county probably went for Trump, most certainly went for Trump, as Ohio did, validating what you and I have said, that to say that, blanketly say that the Trump vote was a racist vote is so inaccurate, designed to smear Trump, but actually to smear hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of white voters who voted for him because of many other factors, including the anti-elite, anti-neoliberal, neocon elites that have been running the country for about 40 years, and other variables. So that is an important sign of what might be going on more broadly in the country. And I would just say it suggests the beginning of a political realignment in the country from the grassroots level. Now, as you and I have talked over the months and over the years, and as recently as yesterday, by the way, that the Democratic Party strategy, and of course, side by side with the FBI and other institutions of the security state, that their idea, the Democrats that is, was to force Trump to the right and prepare to run against him in 2020 from the alleged left, but having boxed Trump into the right and making it impossible for him to exploit politically the movement of his voters away from the right, and not all of them, but maybe a significant number, and to bring into the orbit of what they call in Europe a left-right alliance based upon the issues of trade, of no more wars, of intervention, and so on. The Democrats, knowing that they could never impeach, they could impeach Trump, but they could never remove him from office because the Republicans control the Senate, nonetheless, use the impeachment weapon to force him into a box, into a corner, where the only place he had to go was the right wing of the Republican Party, which was not his complete base. You see what I'm saying? Now we see, I think, another realignment, independent of the 2020 election and independent of what is going on at the level of elites, a realignment at the grassroots. It has, if we understand it properly, it has potential that that is unbelievable. The other thing is, confirming what I was trying to say about pushing Trump to the right and then running against him from the left. That kind of explains for me both Warren and Sanders and their viability in the Democratic primaries. Then there was a shift where the elites of the Democratic Party became shaky with the idea of running against Trump from what they call the far left, the so-called social democratic left, and said we have to go at him from the center, because they saw, even with all of the attacks upon him, that a good part of those centrist independent voters had not made up their minds to completely abandon Trump and go to the Democrats. They abandoned the left option, go to the center, and run Biden as a center left, perhaps right, with Warren as his vice president. But see, it is chess and not checkers.
Yeah.
It is a strategic game. I think that as things look at this moment, the Democratic Party strategy has been less than successful.
You think?
Yeah. The political equation and the game of a checkmate that the Democrats were trying to achieve has not been achieved. Now, that is not to say on my part what the outcome of the 2020 election will be, or what kind of election we will have, where now you have the struggle over whether or not it will be a election by vote, by a mail-in ballots, or whether it will be an actual going to the polls for 130 million people thereabouts, or whether it'll be vote mail-in. Now, this is very important.
If, you know, there's an if question in there too, by the way, just very quickly. You know, okay, as you start pushing at the margins of the methodology, mm-hmm, you change the essence of the thing also, in which case, mm-hmm, is this really an election that we're having at this point? Because, you know, the various changes that were made render, you know, an audit or a, you know, any kind of oversight impossible. And consequently,
that's right,
the whoever's
that's
counting
right,
the votes, you know, we're relying completely on their honesty, and we didn't elect them.
That's right. That's right. And thus a deeper question of legitimacy.
Really?
And at this point, the whole struggle around that, mail-in or not, is centered in Michigan.
Right.
So we are in a chess game, but a chess game where the rules are constantly changing because of the economy, not the virus. This is not, people are confused, I think, that the virus is reshaping the political map. No, it is the economy. It is the depression levels of unemployment, and they are depression levels. The only thing about the numbers is whether or not the ruling elites and the mass media want to really publish what the numbers are. By November, even if the economy begins, and I put quotes, to open up, that does not mean that we are, that we have come out of a jobs depression. This could last for more than a decade.
Right.
It is easier to close an economy down than to reopen it. And we still don't know the magnitude of the ruin and the carnage out there now. But then, whoever wins will have to violate the terms of neoliberal supply-side trickle-down economics and go to some form of demand-side or Keynesian economics, where you put money in the pockets of the working class and the lower middle class. The other part of this is a massive multi-trillion dollar, multi-year, almost multi-decade jobs creation program that would make the New Deal look like child's play. The only way that they can even imagine saving the capitalist arrangement of economic relationships is to go against the policies that have dominated U.S. economic policy for the last 40 years. That is a bitter pill for many of them to swallow, but they have few options. If they do not go to creating jobs, they face a mass movement from the grassroots to take power in the name of the people. And they're not going to be fooled by fake, quote, socialists like the AOCs or the Bernie Sanders the squad.
Right.
Who are just a media creation and who in the end are more interested in reforming neoliberal capitalism rather than change neoliberal capitalism in a fundamental way. So right. The ruling class is faced with one of those crises where they cannot rule in the same way. In other words, when I say rule in the same way, the policies that legitimate them and that keep them in power are now discredited among the masses of people. So they cannot rule in the old way. And the people will not allow them to rule in the old way, which means they will not be ruled in the old way. In bourgeois political science, they call it a crisis of legitimacy, where the people no longer accept the Congress, the presidency, the news media, none of the institutions of bourgeois rule. We are in a new moment, a new era. It is the end of a 75-year run since the end of World War II. And the question is, what will the future look like? It will be struggle. It will be a strategic back and forth for some time. The ruling class attempting to interrupt the normal trajectory of the mobilization, organization, political and ideological education of the people by putting forward fake politicians and fake leaders and using the power of the mass media to create confusion. The normal trajectory in a crisis like this is for the people, through their organization, through their activity, through their political mobilization, to move towards power. What we will do also, or must do also in this time, is redefine what a left is, what a people's program constitutes. I think that's where we're at. And this is independent of the 2020 election and who wins or loses. I think the crisis is so total that ultimately, that's why I say political realignment. There has to be a movement to address the very arrangement of power and powerlessness when all the wealth is concentrated in a very, very few hands and all of the people are being pushed into poverty or near poverty, over 50% before the shutdown. One can only imagine when you see, and this is the visual that to me is deeply significant politically. When you see white people lining up for food giveaways for miles in their cars. See, if it were given the racial nature of American politics and perception, if it were black people, as it has been mainly, or even immigrants or Latinos lining up for food.
Yeah, we've been there before. We'll get through that. Yeah, right.
Yeah, it could be dismissed.
Right.
But long lines of white people means it is a general, all-encompassing crisis of the people. Right. That's what,
So,
and it has to be talked about and addressed on those terms.
I understand and agree completely. Normally, when you have, all these, this stirring pot, this cauldron of things brewing that are going to, crumble it at the knees at some point going forward, that takes on its own, that has its own dynamic. And there are, the construction of alternatives and of decision-making for alternatives kind of organically, requires certainly, human forethought of and intervention. But there's almost an organic relationship with the solution that comes out of the ashes, that develops in the process of burning this stuff into ashes, that instead has not happened here because this was just shut off like a light switch instead of collapsing under its own weight and burning. And so there's no one had a warning on our side, hey, you know what? We're turning everything off tomorrow. In about 6 months, we're going to decide which things get turned back on and in what order and who gets resources and who doesn't. On a global scale, an unprecedented scale. And we need to be looking at figuring out how to identify what needs to be done and how to force this discussion, the public into this discussion, basically, because if you listen to any governor, any county executive, any big city mayor, any federal official, certainly talk about what's coming next, they speak with authority like, well, I'm going to say and they're going to do. And it's, we need to be involved in that conversation and then directing what actually happens later, because this is an opportunity that's presented itself because of this mechanical difference in the way it's rolled out.
You see, when you talk about slogans that will galvanize the people, a lot of people say, well, now this is a moment that we can move towards socialism. I'm not so convinced of that.
Me neither.
This is a period where I think the slogan which is circulating around among people, and it galvanizes, it unites people, is the slogan, people before profits.
Right.
Very simple. But it captures something in its simplicity.
Right.
It's almost like Occupy Wall Street with the slogan the 1%.
Right.
It's
a step. It's a step like a touchstone on the path to people having an understanding of what's happening. And it's the same thing here. This is what I'm saying. Is if you if you look at what's happened so far, some of the things that have happened by fiat with the stroke of a pen, we were told, 3 months ago, were impossible. It can't happen. The system can't sustain it, et cetera. We cannot give everyone in the country $1,200 because the system will collapse and die. Well, in fact, except when we want to close everything for a couple of months, here's your check. Go spend it, have a good time, watch TV. These things before that were impossible, You know, he said a couple times over the course of the last few weeks, it couldn't be before. You could barely get a liquor license with five lawyers and connections at the state liquor authority. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, if you have a license to peddle a hamburger, you can also send home, you know, with the 22-year-old kid, four or five cocktails for the guy who bought the hamburger. You know, mm-hmm. across mm-hmm. the board, you could not before put a clock radio in a classroom without a teacher's strike and a mm-hmm. parents' association strike. Now, we're closing the school, stay home and watch it on Skype or Zoom, no problem. Even the teachers mm-hmm. are saying, let's stay out as long as we can for public safety. There's like mm-hmm. huge things happening in the economic sphere, mm-hmm. the social sphere, cultural sphere, that mm-hmm. looked impossible mm-hmm. before, that were just done at the stroke of a
That's
pen.
Right.
And what I'm saying is that we get to revisit everything we were told couldn't be done.
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and the 1,000-pound elephant in the canoe, the question of peace and the dismantling of the military-industrial complex and these huge military budgets. If the question is people before profit, people before war, people before the war industries, people before the banks, people before the Federal Reserve. I mean, and I agree with you about this, the imagination of possibility is now way beyond what we have ever seen. It's
right.
not one or the other. It's
That's right.
a total transformation, and people can imagine it, can begin to think That's about right. it,
yep.
And so on. So, yeah, I see exactly what you're saying. And in a time like this, it's an exciting time. It's hard,
yeah.
it's difficult for people, but it is also exciting because it's, as you say, it's the beginning
right.
of what could be a move towards power to the people.
You know, both Obama and Trump committed to dropping $1 trillion on upgrading the nuclear weapons of the United States.
Right.
If
right.
they had instead committed to dropping $1 trillion into public health,
Mm-hmm.
and protection against pandemics. How many masks would we have had?
How many
ventilators would we have had?
Let's even go further. How do we know all those trillions have been spent?
Well, that's
another story. Can
the
people
yeah.
can demand
right.
a halt to it.
Right, that's right.
You know?
Yep.
See, this is what we think. But then, you know, if you say peace before profit, well, what we're also talking about is ending belligerency in this new Cold War with China.
Right.
Ending this thing of the U.S. aircraft carriers and 60% of the U.S. Navy and military in the Pacific
right.
trying to surround China.
The pivot to China.
Yeah, the so-called pivot to China. And now we can talk about friendship with China, you know, cooperation, peaceful coexistence with China.
Yep.
The possibilities are huge if we take advantage of what is right in front of our eyes. I know that a big part of the left are still mourning Bernie Sanders' campaign failure.
Right.
But I think I think a big part of the left made a false god of Bernie.
Right.
They did not see that he had feet of clay,
right.
that, you know, that he could, that he did not have the political skill, the political knowledge, the political sophistication to do what he was promising.
That's right.
I think you and I may have seen it, but
yep.
the left was so gullible because they too have fed into the Democratic Party's thing of the only priority is to get rid of Trump.
Right.
If that is the only priority, you are not a left. A left begins with the interest of the people.
Right.
And I you know, that's why that that resolution or that that legislation in Franklin County, Ohio, is so politically important as an indicator of something. See, they could have easily have gone to kind of economic reductionism and say that we're passing a resolution on the economy or the COVID virus or whatever. But no, they did something that, as you put it, a year ago may have been unimaginable in a county that's 70% or almost 70% white people. Right. So these are white people saying white supremacy is a national health emergency. Right. We have to keep our eye on that because it might be able to teach us volumes about where the people are. And let me just say this, Don. You and I have been talking for about 4 years. It seems like all of your life, you know, about what were the people thinking and what did their votes reflect about them politically? You see what I'm saying? Right. Always trying to know what the people are thinking. And now, in the center of Ohio, the Midwest, we have this development. It is not an end. It is a beginning. Right. It is an indicator. It is, I would say, more symbolic at this point than substantive. But it is not a meaningless symbol. Right. It is an important gesture that anyone that calls themselves left or progressive or radical has to take seriously. Yeah. It is more important, frankly. And I know people say don't play one against the other. I think it is more important than all of the wildcat strikes that have taken place thus far. Although the wildcat strikes are very important. It is more important because it represents an ideological shift, a consolidation of an ideological shift among people who voted for Trump in 2016 and will probably vote for him in 2020.
Right. That is an interesting thing all by itself. I want to wait. Yes. I want to see Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski say out loud on television that the white voters that elected Trump in Ohio and in Wisconsin, they did it also in Milwaukee County and elsewhere, voted basically to say white supremacy is insanity.
That's right.
That's what they've done. That's the statement they've made publicly. And I want to see them admit it while they're trying to paint them all as David Duke gun-carrying loonies, that these are people who, in fact, are the first people in the country to declare that racism is insanity.
Listen, Don, I know you do. I certainly do. I feel, in part, vindicated.
Yep.
You see, it... Yeah, we could pass such a resolution in the City Council of New York or Philadelphia.
Yep. They did in Pittsburgh.
Wouldn't be that hard, But in Franklin County.
I know, right. That's the point,
See, that is the point. And what you and I have been trying to understand, and part of our ongoing disagreement with so much that you read in Jacobin and Truth Out and Truth Dig and all of the online social media preaching to their choirs, you do not know what the masses are thinking. You have totally misconstrued the 2016 election.
Deplorables. And it's still, you know, in their minds, in their reporting, it's still the deplorable racist, you know, the basket of deplorables.
And say it or not, the vast majority of the left, especially those following Bernie Sanders, believe that a Hillary Clinton victory would have been better than Donald Trump.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.